Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We are Baltimore Positive. I'm doing a little bit of a special Memorial Day weekend edition of our programming. But this will be kind of eternal. It's just sort of time and place. I was in Las Vegas last weekend with the Maryland party, and everyone got together. We got back Preakness weekend, the Orioles firing, all this stuff happening, and the Ravens, who knows what's going on with the Ravens, but the death of Jim Irsay came in a text to me from my wife, who knows of my fondness for Jim, that goes back to a long walk I took at the Arizona Biltmore with Steve Bisciotti and Jim Irsay to discuss the Colts records and them and their placement in Canton, Ohio. I've had a lot of people hit me about that, and I'm bringing in a guest that I'm going to have fun with. This guest that's going to be half somber, half jubilant, and if Jim Irsay were listening down, he probably would appreciate it because I'm going to let my hair out before it's all over with. I hope it's utopia by the time this whole segment is over. Clark Judge has been my friend for, I don't know, about a quarter of a century. But he was a bit of a sports writing legend to me and all the legends around me in my time in the late 80s and early 90s as a guy that went off, found sunshine in the San Diego Superchargers as well as the San Francisco 49ers. He also married into some NFL fun executive royalty as well, but he covered a billion Super Bowls. He's on the Hall of Fame voting committee for Football Hall of Fame in Canton, and he's been my friend, but also we shared a relationship with Jim Irsay that made be a little sideways and weird. And I know you and I wound up at Jim Irsay's big party in New York a few summers ago. It was one of the great nights of music ever that night. And I want to welcome Clark Judge in, my friend and Hall of Fame voter, just to talk about Jim. And you know, I got all sorts of props, dude. You got props, Clark? Are you going to show things? This is a 71 NFL belt buckle. You're going to break the Johnny U out on me, are you? Dun, 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 dun,
You
dun.
got it. Hang on, hang on.
Yeah,
There's more. Hang on, one second.
Well, in order to get in the mood for this, Clark, I had to channel a little bit of great sports writing, and Bob Irsay.
1959.
Look at that.
1959. He signed that to me.
Is
You
that
know,
Western
just
Maryland up there?
yep. 1959. Yep.
Well, here's
Signed
what
it.
I got. I got the John Stedman Baltimore Colts
Ooh.
pictorial history. I have the
Wow.
best and worst of Stedman because I wanted to sort of touch things with Henneman. Henneman passing this week. We're gonna love him up a little bit. The Baltimore Colts story, which was gifted to me recently, and a book that I actually did some research with John. I'm credited from Colts to Ravens. So, Clark, I don't know where to begin with this the death of Jim Irsay, because it kind of hit me harder than I thought it would, because I thought of that hour that I spent on the deck with him and Steve Bisciotti, and Steve had coached me up about trying to get the records back because the fans here wanted it so badly. And I got to know him, and then whenever he saw me, he wanted to talk about rock and roll or the Beatles and
Right.
music, and you know, and I don't know, you know him as a kid, right? Like literally when you were covering the Baltimore Colts, right?
He was, that was 1982, 83, 84, right in there. I left in 84. And so, yeah, I knew him as a young man then, and then got to know him much better when he was in Indianapolis and got a real appreciation for him where I had no appreciation for his father. I mean, I resented his father. I didn't know much about him, but I knew enough about him that I wanted to keep my distance from him. What he did to Baltimore, I could never forgive. So the Irsay family was not something that I really wanted to be part of. And then I realized Jim was very different, and Jim was trying to overcome some of that, and he did. He listen, was he flawed? Absolutely, a very fragile character, a vulnerable character. But one who was so giving, compassionate with people, did so much community service. When you and I saw him, yeah, he had the Jim Irsay collection that he brought to New York that day. It was June 2nd, 2, 3 years ago. And he made it free. He could have charged a fortune. He didn't. He took it around the country, made it free because he wanted to share it with people. And his death hit me very hard, Nestor. And I'll tell you, just give you one example. I was involved here 3 years ago, in a land deal here in town in Connecticut, where the Boy Scouts were selling a camp that our daughter went to, 250 acres, beautiful area. It's pristine wilderness, really. But they were selling it. They're going to sell it to the highest bidder. And so I was part of a group, a grassroots group that said, we've got to protect it somehow. We've got to protect it. They said, you can't, you're not going to be able to raise the money. And I said, well, here are some people I'll contact. And I put Jim Irsay's name on the list. And I just wrote him and said, listen, here's what we got. We're trying to protect this, keep it as a wild space, preserve it eternally. Are you interested in doing anything? Anything can help. And he said, let me think about it. And he came back and said, would this work? And I said, what? He goes, this, $100,000.
Wow.
He knew nothing about it. He just knew that I was interested in it and that it was something that we were very passionate about. We protected it against all odds in Connecticut. When you talk about Deer Lake in Connecticut, environmentalists will say, what a great grassroots campaign. It was people like Jim Irsay that made it possible.
Well, I listen, it's very complicated here, right? I'm in Baltimore, you're long gone. I want to set the stage for what you found in Baltimore because it sounds to me like you came in right around Schleister, right around where Burt
Very
Jones
much,
was
yes.
gone.
Yeah.
I mean, was Burt still here? Like, give me
Yes,
the
yeah,
lay of
yes.
the land of the Jim Irsay you found and what he did with his life and what his nasty ass father did to leave him, right? Like, and all the Bernie Miklas journalism about Bob Irsay's mother and just all of it, right? And the Jim Irsay I found as a villain, right? You know, I mean, we celebrated Bob Irsay's death around here. I've got Bob Irsay's dummy, the little mini dummy after Nacho Mama's closed, it came back to me. So I have Resig's dummy right here in the radio studio. And it's just complicated. I mean, just holding up this belt buckle is complicated for people in my world, right?
Yeah, right.
You know, anything with a Colt logo, if you're of the right age, or I can sing the Colt fight song or any of that. And his last name was Irsay. And if you didn't know him, if you didn't meet him, if you're from Baltimore, it's F him. It's all of the
Yeah,
above, right? It's all of that.
right.
But then I got to be an adult. I hated everything about going to Indianapolis, man. My wife would say, "Why do you even go?" I'm like, "What's well, where they have the combine?" Yeah, you know, like
Yeah,
I gotta go, you know. But I
right.
hated. I mean, it really viscerally bothered me until I was 40 years old, and there was a point where Jim was very magnanimous with me that made me think about things. Like the time I spent with him, he was like a really, really peaceful, thoughtful. You know, when I talked to him, I mean, Steve Bisciotti put me up like a priest to be in front of him on the, and they were smoking cigars. I'm chewing through the cigar smoke at the Biltmore on a 95 degree day. You know the deal. And we're talking about the records, and I thought, this is not a bad human. And I don't know why Steve put me up to do that and why we were there, but we were there on behalf of Baltimore Ravens fans and Colts fans, on behalf of Johnny U. You already held Johnny U up. And Jim's like, I'll do anything I can do to help it along, but the Football Hall of Fame people feel like records are records. We did broach that subject. This was in 2008. It's right after Jim won the Super Bowl, nine, right after the Peyton and eight. It was the Peyton Manning Super Bowl that Steve wanted to approach Jim about it, about the records of the Baltimore. It's that serious a conversation. And how am I going to be mad at Jim Irsay after he? That changed everything for me. And then I went to the Super Bowl in Indianapolis, and like that place was just not a place Baltimore people ever wanted to look at. And I saw what it did for their city and how beautiful. That was the best Super Bowl I ever attended of
Yeah,
all of
it was
them.
good. It was
The
good.
weather was unbelievable. It was like a civic fair, like an Indiana fair. And I thought to myself, why am I going to be angry at these people and the ghosts of these people? We've got our own thing. We've had two Super Bowls here now. Like, why? I'm not going to die with that anger. And I'm so glad that I could let it go. But it was because Jim Irsay was just. It just impressed me, Clark, and in the way it impresses people like you that found him as a kid with his old man and see what blessings he wound up giving the world in many ways.
Yeah, no, when I came to Baltimore, it was 1979. Burt Jones was still there. And I covered some of the practices. When I came there as sort of a gopher, and not really a gopher, but I was working on the desk there at the Evening Sun. And then I quickly went into high school sports, became the high school sports editor, took over for Mike Klingemann that year. And then they asked me to do emergency duty on an ACC tournament one Year it was 1981. No, 19. Yeah, 1981. Sorry, right in there. And I said, okay. So I flew down to Greensboro and I did the tournament. And I came back and they said, you did so well. We want to put you on Maryland. And I went, you want me to put me on Maryland basketball? Yeah. So I
Yeah, like
covered
Ernie
lefties.
Graham era right there. What do you got going? A
Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
buck,
Yeah.
right? All right, got it.
And so I go. They had Charles Pittman. You know. But
I
I
know you
go.
know. Hell, I don't know, Clark.
Yeah, oh, that was Lefty. And Lefty and I got in it once. But so I go 81-82 with the Terps, and so then Ken Murray leaves town, and Burr Jones left town, and now you're going to draft Elway, and they put me on the Colts. And lo and behold, the 82 season, what do we have? We have a strike. And that's how I get into the NFL. I'm covering a strike, and I'm covering the team that I adored when I was a kid, the Baltimore
Cush,
Colts.
right? Cush by
Yeah,
then?
sure. Yeah, Frank comes in. So you got Frank
Okay.
Kush. So you've got this guy who's supposed to be a tyrant. He wasn't a tyrant, but he could be. He could be. 95% of the time, he was a great guy, but that 5% is what got him the reputation. And there were some great stories, which Holden Smith's story, a great one. Another guy named Zach Valentine. They trade for him. Doesn't show up for 36 hours. Shows up Zach Valentine. They said, oh, yeah, you're cut. He cut it before he even got right
Mark,
there.
so I'm a
So,
12, 13-year-old kid whose old man loved the Colts and he had quit on them at that point.
yeah.
Everything about all of it, the stadium was empty by the time you got on the beat.
Yeah,
Empty.
that's right.
I was
Yeah.
at those games with, a Chester Markle kicking field goals for the Packers and 0-8 and 1. That
Oh, wait, that's the year
oh,
I covered him.
yeah, all of that. Yeah.
Mike Pagel, Schleister, Bert's gone.
David
And
Hum.
yeah, David Hum. Actually, during the strike, I played a pickup basketball game with the Colts. You're going out there, and they go, hey, who are you going to guard? And I guarded David Hum. So I
Well, at
guarded
least
David
you didn't
Hum as
have to
far as.
guard Randy McMillan or Curtis Dickey. That probably would have been a
Yeah, that's
problem, right?
right. Yeah, that would have been a problem. But wait, I mean, so it was a whole
Maurice
different era.
McCall and the pivot.
Well,
Yeah, you
yeah,
don't
all
want
those
any of
guys.
that.
Yeah, all those
I
guys.
love talking. See, this is when I get guys like you on that only,
Yeah.
people either know. If you know. And if you're not enjoying the segment, you just didn't love the 1982 Colts,
Ed Simonini. Remember his wife,
Oh,
Karen
Randy Burke.
Christie?
You're gonna get
Karen
all into it,
Christie.
right?
Karen Christie was Ed Simonini's wife. She happened to be the playmate of the year. All right, so she comes to practice, and they're going, "Oh my God, please keep her away from here." Hal Hunter's the offensive line coach. I can't get my guys to not look at her. Okay, would she keep her away from here? It was a whole different deal. But yeah,
Oh.
and so I didn't know Jim. I mean, I certainly knew of Bob Irsay, and then tried to track him down once he takes off. I will tell you, when they made the Elway trade, remember staying up all night that night, worked it all night. So didn't go to sleep for, I'd say, I don't know, 24, 36 hours. Kevin Cowher and I were in the office, and we were working the phones at 2 in the morning, 3 in the morning. And we're calling back to Denver, and TJ Simers was the guy I was telling, here's what's going on. And he tracks down Reeves, and he and I became lifelong friends out of that. But from then on, my goal was to get Irsay. And I flew to Chicago. Don Pearson and I cornered him in a building we thought, except he took the elevator to the floor we didn't cover, and we missed him. So then he comes back to town, and you would remember when he did his State of the Colts.
Well, so hang on. You were the beat writer for the Colts for like 2.5 years, maybe three
No,
before they
no,
left.
no.
No?
1982, 82, strike season. Then Ken Murray comes back, and they said, well, we made a decision. Ken's going to be covering the team. And I said, wait a second, you just told me I had a good year. You did. We're going to put you in the NFL, Pete. I said, we don't have an NFL beat. We do now. It was the best thing that ever happened to me because I got to travel the country and go see Bradshaw and other guys. And you get sit downs with guys you couldn't possibly get today. You couldn't. So with Terry Bradshaw, when he's coming back from that elbow injury, I go to Pittsburgh. It's a Tuesday. He's going to play Saturday, I think it was, a Saturday afternoon game against the Jets.
That
It's
was the
me
game
and a.
without announcers, wasn't it?
I think it might have been.
It
I
was the
don't
game
recall.
without announcers, but go, I remember that game. Go ahead.
So it's me and Fred Mitchell are the only guys there to talk to Terry Bradshaw coming back from this injury. Today it'd be 1,000 people. Fred Mitchell and I are sitting down with Terry Bradshaw. He was great. Anyway, so he comes back, plays for like a half or a quarter, whatever, throws a couple touchdown passes, and his career's over. Finished. He's done. But we got that. So I had things like that. I flew out to San Diego to see Elway play the Chargers when he lined up behind guard. So it got me exposed to numbers of people. And then the next year, 84, I'm out. I go to San Diego. The Colts move to Indianapolis. I go to San Diego. I think I got the better of that deal.
So you
Now,
left before you weren't here the night of the Mayflowers. You had
I
left.
was.
You
No,
were.
was.
Okay.
That, and so I went, okay, what are we doing now? Well, good question. And it's not a long story, not worth getting into. And so the editor said, you have an offer from San Diego. I think you should take it. And I said, I like it here better. I don't think I want to go. And he said, well, find out. Just go out there. You have a team to cover. You don't have one here. I can't give you something that I'd like to. I just can't. They were trying to work on something. So, and then I remember Ernie Accorsi saying to me, listen, what's the worst that can happen? You hate it. You come back here. And he said, right. Going to San Diego was the best move I ever made. Not because I left Baltimore, but because I now was exposed to a different market, different players. And my experience grew. I went from there to San Francisco, and you know the rest of the story. I didn't know Jim Irsay when he would when I was covering the Colts. Certainly know of his dad, but I heard stories about him from Ernie Accorsi, who was the GM. Then Ernie left as the GM. But there was a great one where he said that was a great story where Ernie said, you never know what's going on with his dad. But he said he called me one time and said, you got to get in touch with Jim, you gotta find him. And Ernie said, why? He goes, his house is burning down. And Ernie said, what? He said, his house is burning. So Ernie calls Jim. Jim picks up the phone. This is Ernie telling me. And he says, hey, Jim, what's going on there? And he goes, nothing. Why? Anything unusual happening in your house? No. Nothing unusual. No. There's no fire in no. So it was Bob with one of his imaginary thoughts. I mean, he was probably under the influence of something, but what was it just sort of was hallucinating, whatever. So Ernie said that's kind of the stuff that we have to put up with here. Anyway, make a long story short, when he came back there, or Irsay, I don't know if you remember that press conference when we talked about the Elway deal, he couldn't get anyone's name right. Called Ernie Mr. Ernie. He called Frank Cush, like Frank Szymanski or Ernie Szymanski. He
Well, he
got
kept
everything
saying,
wrong.
"You're a bad man. I'm not talking to you." He was talking to Gordon Beard, apparently, in that
Yeah,
one. Yeah, I think that's who he was from the
Gordon
AP.
Beard or Gordon Forbes. I mean, it probably been either one of them, but
But
probably
what I
wasn't
want to
Gordon
ask
Forbes.
you is, you covered the team on and off, in and out, for a couple year, 2 year, you know,
Yeah,
whatever.
right. Yeah.
You were never in a room with Irsay, like right. He was never like
No.
around, right?
No. But when they left, I despised them. I despised the family because of what they did. So much so that the PR director for the Indianapolis Colts saw me when they played Indianapolis and when the Chargers did, because I'm covering the Chargers, flying with the Chargers. And he said, why are you so tough on us? Why do you beat us up so much? I said, because your owner and what they did to the city of Baltimore, they ripped the soul out of that city. They took the soul away from a city that deserved better. And for years, he and I, Craig Kelly, didn't get along because of that. And then we did, because I learned what you did. I just learned to let it go. And I let it go because of a couple things, but one of which was when I was in San Francisco, they were playing the Indianapolis Colts at home. And Jim came a day early with the team and then went downtown and made, I think it was something like a $500,000 contribution to something like a homeless group. And it was a charitable donation. And I saw it and went, whoa, I mean, it's kind of, or Jim Irsay. And then I kind of got to know him. And I'm not sure how it happened or when it happened.
Well,
Got to
this was
know him.
after his father's death. Okay, all right.
Yeah, it was after his father's death. And
Yeah, okay.
so I'm just trying to think when his father died. He died in the
Yeah,
90s,
I
I think.
was never in a room with him until, maybe when I started covering owners' meetings at the turn of the century when his father was gone, right? And before he had won, but around the time they were getting into the Peyton Manning's, world where he had sort of cleaned it up a little bit after Jeff George, and you know what I mean? It was getting. I mean, it was bad for 20 years, right? I mean, from 84, I'm not, well, it's bad for a decade here, but from 84 through the turn of the century, his old man never really pissed a drop ever in running the place. And look at what he accomplished in his 25 years of running it, right?
Well, I mean, but when they had Dickerson, they were not a bad team. I mean, 95 team, I think, was in the championship game.
Yeah, with Jim Harbaugh, correct, and Goose, correct.
So,
That was close with Marcia Broda as well. Yeah.
yeah, no, that's right. They had some good people there. But once I got exposed to him and we started talking, we realized we had similar interests. We loved music. And then he started talking about some of the concerts I'd been to. And then we got closer and closer. So every time I went to Indianapolis, I looked for him. And you're right about the Indianapolis Super Bowl. I would say if someone said to you, what's your favorite Super Bowl? I said, Super Bowl site, my favorite is San Diego because I loved it there and I think it's a good place to have one. However, the best one to me was Indianapolis. Because of what that, you're right. The temperature was great. It was like a fair. They had a zip line going through town. I got on it, did it.
It was just fantastic, and everyone there were real townies and local people that drove within. People from Chicago came down. It was just
Nicest
like it was a
people
different kind of Super Bowl than like
than Dallas or
Floridian
something.
or yeah or any of the ones where it's golf. It's
But
golf people.
yeah, and so Jim took us out. He took me and Rick Goslin and a couple others out for I think it was a dinner or something one night, and was so gracious to us. And I'll never forget, he was asking me, "When did you first see the Who?" And I said, "I saw him at '69 nightclub in Boston, right outside of the left field wall of Fenway Park. It's called the Boston Tea Party." And what were they doing? I said they were doing Tommy. They'd come off of the Woodstock. Oh man, as you know, that's when I would have loved to have seen him, man. It's just. That's when they would love to have seen him. They were so you're so lucky. And so we had long conversations. We were talking about Stephen Stills, a lot of people. And anyway, one of the trips, either just before then or just after then, he asked me to come back into his office. Takes me around the office, as you know, if you've been in there, walls full of all sorts of guitars, album covers, things signed by everyone. And it was astonishing to see what was in there. I think he has a Abbey Road cover signed by all four Beatles. And so I looked and went, this is amazing. So we had a common interest with music, like you did, but we would also talk about football. And whenever I saw him, we'd seek each other out. And I really enjoyed being around him because I knew he had a story to tell. And one of my last owners' meetings was in Laguna Beach. And I remember he took a break and said, let's go outside. And we sat down for an hour, and he poured his soul out about what his father was, what he was like, and why he was not going to be like his father. And it was really something I'd never heard before. I'm not sure how much we played it. I was working at CBS Sports then, and I'm not sure how much we played at that time,
You
but I thought,
recorded
this
it?
is.
It was an audio piece, or it was a reporter sit down?
No, it wasn't an audio piece. I mean, I taped it, but no way. I put it on our site and CBSSports.com, and it was a revelation to me because he was essentially saying, "I know who and what he was. I don't want to be that guy." And he's tempted all the time, but I'm not going to be that guy. And I know that he tripped up and fell in some things. We had setbacks and that sort of stuff, but he wanted to be something different, and to me was he made a difference. He was in the community service. He kept the team in Indianapolis when there was some threats of them leaving. Built the stadium. I mean, he I, the his death hit me hard. I actually really did. I mean, you and I went to that thing 3 years ago, and that's not the last time I saw him. He and I did an interview together 2 years ago, and he was always willing to do whatever I or someone else wanted. And like, Clark, don't worry, we're going to do the interview. Let's just, and he was in LA at that time. We'll do this. And we put it up and he was great. And when I saw this, I was blown away. When I heard this, I was blown away, even though there had been some signs that he wasn't well. But I was shocked. And I corresponded with Pete Ward, whom you no doubt know, and was in Baltimore when the Colts were in, then moved to Indianapolis with them. And he just said, I'm devastated. I'm devastated. And so was I.
Yeah, Pete Ward. By the way, Clark Judge is my guest here. We're on Baltimore Positive. We're talking about Jim Irsay, and I'm having a cup of Memorial Day coffee and memorializing all sorts of memorials in a lot of ways. And we lost Jim Heneman this week, and I'm holding John
Yeah.
Steadman books and this sort of era of the Colts and even the hatred of Irsay and the Colts name in Baltimore. His death this week on my timeline, people didn't have a chance to know and whatever, but there's a point for me with you mentioned Pete Ward, and I'm sure most of this happened because of Bisciotti, but I think at some point Craig Kelly and I, or you mentioned Craig Kelly as well, so I'll bring him in. The team came here in 96 and we played a game 5, 6 weeks into our existence, that was a Sunday night game. Jim Harbaugh was the quarterback of the Colts. Vinny Testaverde was the quarterback of the Ravens. They had this young kid named Ray Lewis and John Ogden. And it was my birthday. It was October 14th, 1996. And I took my first ever road trip out. I took 20, 30 people out to Indianapolis to go on a road trip to Indianapolis, of all places. My buddy Scunny, the late great Scunny at Nacho Mama's, had his bachelor party that night in Indianapolis, as I remember parts of it. But so it was kind of a seminal time because it was Baltimore versus Indianapolis. It was the first game, was a few weeks into it. I had met Craig Kelly at that point, and all of that bad vibe and was really raw and wide open at that point, 1996, 97, 98. And then the Peyton Manning thing happened. And, at the turn of the century, and Bob's death happened, and all of that happened. And the Ravens won a Super Bowl. And there was a period after that where it's like, all right, man, we got the better end of the deal. You know what I mean? We wound up getting the second wife that was like fantastic. And God bless all of you and your records. But there was the Johnny U thing. There was the. For all of the Lenny Moores, Tom Matties, Johnny was still alive for a period of that until the early part of the century. So for me, the air got a little bit let out of the tires just because we had our own thing. Had we never gotten a team back, man, it would have been a whole different gig here. Like I don't, I can't say what would happen had Art Modell not moved the team here. But it's that fixed a lot of things for me as a guy on the radio. I was then a decade and a half into being on the radio, but Steve Bisciotti and I somehow were talking records and this and that. This is when Steve was really active and cared, and when I was still a media member, which is just all of it as I get older has been disgraceful through all of this. But it's the people I've met and the people like Jim Irsay, who would be misunderstood here because of his last name, that I'm not going to blame him for his dad's sins. But I took this long walk with him at the Biltmore. And you can look it up. It was right after they won the Super Bowl, 8 or 9. So I'm getting a little further in. You're like a year out on sitting with him, and you
They won
caught
the
it.
Super Bowl. They won the Super Bowl in 2006.
Seven. Six? Six? Okay, then it was six
Six.
or
Yeah,
seven.
six. Yeah.
What
No,
it was.
it was six. Because in 2007 the Patriots were undefeated
Well, I'd have to figure
until they
out
won.
the Biltmore year versus the Florida year where they do the owners' meetings. But this was a Biltmore walk, and it was 6, 7, 8 in that range. And we talked about records, and now that they had won, what happens to the Johnny U stuff, and Peyton Manning would be this and that in their record books. And where does Baltimore sit? And the fans here hated going to Canton and having to go to the Indianapolis wing to see anything associated with the Colts. So Steven and Jim, and here's what Jim said. And man, Steve, like, I don't talk about this much because I didn't talk about it at all on the air at that time. Like now that it's 20 years later, I'm telling the story. But Steve came to me with the cigar and says, "We're going to talk to Jim. Now listen, he's a really mellow guy. So like, tone down the nasty nester thing a little bit, like give him space to breathe. Try to talk a little slower at him because he's going to react better to you because he's a very kinesthetic guy." This is what Steve is saying to me, right? So we go for this walk, and Jim's like, I've always wanted to get the Baltimore thing. Anything I can do to fix Baltimore, I would do. Anything I could do, I would do. Except here's what I'm not going to do. I can't rewrite what really happened. I'm going to do a little his Midwestern, I can't, the Mayflowers, all of that happened. I can't, but the records really, they happened in Baltimore, so he's like, I'm trying, I know how the Hall of Fame, and we literally sat and prayed on this over cigars. And through that conversation, anytime he ever saw me after that, Baltimore, he would always see me that way. And then it was like once he found that I was the music critic at the Sun, and we had a longer talk at, another owner's meeting, and we're having a, I'm having a cocktail later at night. We just talk Beatles and like all that. But I never sat in his office. I never did any of that. Most of my relationship was Pete Ward. Now, I will say this. In 2009-10, I was working on a book that I never finished. It was a conceptual idea of how many people I touched who touched leadership in Baltimore. At that point, Brian Billick was my partner, had left the team. And I'm like, man, I could get to Don Shula. I could get to Lefty Driesell. I can do lacrosse. I could do all of these. Earl Weaver was alive and talked to me, right? Which I wound up helping John Miller with his book recently because I sat down with some of these people and I stupidly never sat with Don Shula, who agreed to sit with me. I'm an idiot. Schnellenberger was all ready to sit with me in Palm Beach and I did stupid. But nonetheless, I did sit with Jim and Pete set it up. And we just talked about leadership, and the people he talked about were Ted Marchabrota, Joe Thomas, that he used their thoughts and their way. He didn't mention his father much at all. He did, but like I didn't want to poke at that bear. You know, I mean, he was being kind enough to sit with me. I didn't want to go down some dark. It wasn't a gotcha thing. And at this point, we had had a pretty, awesome relationship in that way where when he sat with me, he was very comfortable sitting with a Baltimore guy on camera. And I released it the day after he passed because I never used it. And it was just beautiful. Like he sat there and talked about what really influenced him at that point in his life to be able to save a franchise, keep a franchise. I mean, the Cook family had to take, I mean, a lot of these families didn't get to keep their franchises. He wound up making a real difference. And I felt it that Super Bowl week. I felt it in the Final Fours I've gone to out there. I felt it when I went to see U2. I zipped in to see U2 play with Beck one night in the dome. Like Jim Irsay made a like was given this thing that he drove better than his father in sobriety and sanity would be very proud of what Jim Irsay did for
Oh,
Indiana
no
and
question.
Indianapolis.
No question. I mean, that's why it felt so bad, because he was trying so hard to get things right, and he got things right a lot. And I don't know what happened at the end, but I know that he had more to achieve. And he, if you knew him well, which a lot of people didn't, but if you knew him well, it sort of got inside of Jim Irsay. It's a guy who really, really wanted to do the right thing and wanted to be liked. And people say, well, what about this? What about, I don't care about that.
He may have even treated me a little more special because I was a kid from Baltimore and had my heart broken, and he knew that. You know what I
Oh,
mean? Like,
sure.
yeah, when he was around me, he would always, and he didn't put on any air, but he would always go out of his way to be, to talk a little music with me, you know? Really, always.
Yeah, so when we talked last, I was talking about that situation, the Baltimore move, what his father went through, and I'm not going to recite it, but one thing I said was, if you had the team then, what would you have done? Would you have kept John Elway? He goes, what are you, crazy? Of course I would have. I never would have traded him. I never would have traded him. And he was very logical, and his father wasn't, because his father, I mean, as he admitted, it was an alcoholic, and unfortunately, it got the better part of him. And Jim was trying so hard to make the Irsay name something that people could be proud of. Well, they can be proud of. I mean, with Jim, they can be. With his father, I had no use for his father after they left Baltimore. I had no use for him when I was in Baltimore, because I saw what he was doing with the city and, the eminent domain and all that stuff that was going on, and essentially was hanging the city in the breeze. And I thought this was really unfair. And I loved watching the Colts. I've got tons of Colts stuff. I know what they meant to the city. When I was there, I knew what they meant. I went to the games before I started covering them as a spectator, saw Burt Jones play there. I just
Where did you grow
that beat
up? You grew up somewhere
all
else.
over the country. My dad was in the service. I
Yeah,
went to
but
three.
you the Colts were your team as a kid
Yeah,
then.
I went to three high schools in 4 years. So my dad was in the service. We moved all over the place, and we lived in Hawaii when I was a kid. But when I was in junior high and high school, I mean, those are the times you got one or two games on a Sunday, depending on where you lived. When we were living in Newport, Rhode Island, because my father taught at the Naval War College there, we got the Giants games. So I got to see the New York Giants. Really didn't want to, but I wanted to see the Colts. And when we moved to Camp Lejeune, North Carolina, I did get to see the Colts games, and I liked that. That was great. I loved watching them play. I loved what Unitas represented. And I was crushed, so crushed by Super Bowl III that Monday, I said to my mom, the day after the game, I can't go to school. And
How
she
old were
said, why? I
you in
said,
69? How old were you?
the senior in high school. I
All
said, I
right.
can't go to school. I can't go to school. I said, I can't. And she goes, okay, stay. I
Dude,
didn't
the
go to
day
school.
after the
She can't.
Colts beat the Ravens in 06, I wouldn't have gone to school either. I mean, the Peyton Manning game, remember that one?
Yeah.
That
Oh, yeah. Oh,
was a
sure.
bad,
Sure.
bad, That was a bad night in Baltimore. That's, dude, that's how angry I still was. I had Ursay sucks signs like in 2006. So, right? I mean, it took a lot
Oh,
for me to
I know
put the
that.
sword down and to feel the way I feel as a grown up, which makes me an evolved sentient being, I think, at this point. And we're discussing the life of Jim Ursay, Clark Judge, you knew. So, did you
Do you
not have
remember how
Jim?
many do you remember how many touchdowns the Colts put on the Ravens that day?
None. Yeah, it
Zero.
was 15-6. It was
That's
the
right. Kicked five
Todd
field
Heap.
goals.
Oh, it was terrible.
Five field goals.
Don't, let's, we're not going to talk about it. My wife filmed me blubbering over the city that night. Like, literally, just, I wasn't like drunk or anything. I was just so, I could not believe that they lost the Steve McNair era. So, nonetheless,
Yeah, Steve McNair.
Clark, you know, for you, did you not have Jim on your pod a couple of years ago? I want you to talk about that a little bit.
That's what I was talking about. That conversation about leaving Baltimore and John Elway and that sort of thing. We talked for a long time about that.
So that is, you, people can look, go listen to that, correct?
No, they can't listen to it. I posted it
You
this week.
posted
In
it.
fact, yeah,
Talk of Fame, right? Okay.
if so, I looked for it said, at the top, click on this, which you could. And you can find the interview. And so the interview is there. I clicked on it. It says 404, which means it's disappeared. And
Oh,
I went,
no.
oh, so it's disappeared. Somebody's got it. I don't know where it is.
Well, yeah, we got to find the archive of that because, I mean, I sat down when Art Modell was still well enough to sit, and I sat for hours with him telling his life story. And there's part of that, and I run it once in a while here when I'm at the beach or need some time off or just want to be retrospective. Memorial Day, sometimes I'll run folks who are no longer with us to just to honor them and have these great conversations with these people who saw and did things in the league. And Jim Irsay in the 1970s, right, was like a kid on the wall catching footballs, and like his dad never had time for him or anything else or
That's right.
whatever, and like had to sort of figure life out. And maybe this is where we really take a detour off of football and accomplishments to rock and roll and escapism. So I'm gonna let my hair down here before I do this, and I'm just gonna say, like, when people say to me, like, what's the best show you saw recently or concert? I saw AC/DC last week. I sat in the second row last week, saw Sammy Hagar do the Van Halen thing out in Vegas. I saw Pat Benatar. I mean, like, I've seen some great stuff. One of the most amazing things I saw, and my wife didn't go to New York with me on that trip because she was like doing something with her. I think her mom had a battle going. My wife couldn't go, didn't go. I turned it into a long weekend where I went and saw Robert Plant play at Forest Hills in New York. They've turned the tennis court into a concert bowl,
I
right?
know.
So I saw Robert Plant, but I built that weekend because Pete Ward and Jim Irsay kept saying, you got to come to one of my, I'm doing my auctions, my things, and we're doing this for stigma, we're doing this for mental health, we're doing, and I saw concerts popping up with Ann Wilson from Hard, with different artists, and I'm like, Pete, dude, I want to come do this. It's coming to New York. It's going to be great. The night we got it, we got Natalie Merchant on the front end of it. It
That's
was
right.
a block and a half from Madison Square Garden. It was up in this Palladium Hammersmith thing going
Hammersmith
on.
Ballroom. Yeah,
It
Hammersmith
was
Ballroom is cool.
incredible. And I'm out in line walking to get in, and there's Clark Judge, my rock and roll brother from a run, from another run, a Rundgren mother. And I would just say, like, we went in, and I don't know about you that night, but it was cocktailing, and it was Hunter S. Thompson this, and guitars, and just all sorts of cool stuff going on, and free cocktails, and it was flowing, and it was awesome. But when the music started, and I walked up to the stage, and there's Mike Mills, and there's Kenny Wayne Shepherd, and there's Kenny Aronoff, who was on stage last Saturday night banging the skins with Sammy Hagar 20 feet away. I lost my mind. And when they're doing Don't Go Back to Rockville and Kenny Wayne's
Yeah, that's
doing his,
right.
oh my, I see you lighting up. But then Jim sang with them. And
He
I
did.
found the video the night he passed last week. I found all the video I shot up on the stage. And most impressively, and I released it, was a version of him doing Tom Petty's, a Tom Petty song. And I released it. It's kind of haunting at this point. But man, Jim Irsay loved rock and
He
roll. And then
loved it. Oh,
he
loved it.
became
Loved it.
rock and roll. And at the end, he that it, rock and roll was as much fun to him as sports ever was.
Yeah, no, oh, no question. I think he did the weight by the band that night too. But yeah, he loved rock and roll. I think it was a great
Something
diversion to
Big,
Jeff
by the
Rush.
way. Something Big was the Tom Petty song he did. Go ahead.
But I think rock and roll was a nice diversion for him, because he could be himself, and he loved being around those people. He loved creative people, and that was a magnanimous night. And funny, I want to go back to you mentioned earlier Pete Ward. Pete Ward is a guy I've always admired, liked very much, considered him a dear friend. And I mentioned Craig Kelly. Craig Kelly and I, as I said, we were on completely different planets until we weren't. And then once I let go of the angst, he and I became really good friends. And part of it is because my wife, who you mentioned is part of, he said, NFL royalty, she'll love that.
I
She
think
and
of her as NFL royalty. She
well,
always
so do
treated me
I.
right.
So do I. She
She thought
was
I was
very
a media
close.
member.
Yes, but she was very close to Craig. And she said, and he goes, she said to me, Craig once said to me, I don't see what you see in this guy. And then we became close and we did a lot of things together. And Craig was always very generous to me when I went out there to Indianapolis. And I want to make sure I just set the record straight that he and I are
Oh, and I feel the
good
same way
friends.
about Craig. And I'm sure at one point we had a conversation about, hey, dude, you know, I always say this about the Orioles and the new ownership. You understand we've dealt with some trauma here, right? Like, let's just start from the baseline of there was trauma involved here if you were a kid in Baltimore in 1984. There just was. And you know, that was sort of baked into this, which makes this conversation we're having at the end of Bob Irsay's son's life. Well, you're looking at the gym. You got your ticket there? Is that what it is?
Jim Irsay collection, and then obviously their pictures I
I
had
remember
taken
you and I
with,
walking around, and I'm like,
and
hey,
looking
look,
at.
there's Hunter S. Thompson's joint. Burned that hole
And there,
in the back seat of
that's
that
what they miss.
car. Yeah.
Natalie Merchant. Now, I also remember Natalie Merchant wasn't too pleased with the
No,
Sedgwick
no, no. I
situation.
remember her sassing the crowd a little bit. You know, trouble me, absolutely. But she was lovely, though.
I love Natalie Merchant. I didn't like her that night because she was sort of talking down to people. Like, what do you expect here? I mean, it's basically an enlarged, a gargantuan nut cocktail party here. And she didn't like the fact that people were not silent, they were talking. I understand that, but this isn't a concert,
Dude,
you know. You
Mike
know,
Mills was singing Don't Go Back to
that was
Rockville
great.
like a Stipian angel at 3 feet away, and there literally were just eight of us gigging around thinking this might be one of the greatest moments of my life. And
Well, I was
some
saying
people
that
aren't
to.
digging it, but I dug it, and I'm telling you right now that the Jim Irsay night of music, I tell my wife all the time, I've shown her the videos, I'm like, you have no idea how viscerally excited and how the little boy in me came out again at that moment. And then later that night, they invited me back to the cocktail party, and I wound up talking more to a guy named Miguel Ramos, who was in the band, who was in the Bodines for a period of time, and I wound up Bodining him a little bit. But I talked to Mike Mills a little bit of baseball because he's a Braves guy, and I moved around that cocktail party. That was one of the really amazing nights of music, of cocktails, of purpose and mental health. And I never spoke to Jim again after that night. I saw him later that evening, kind of holding court at the hotel, but I was never in a room with Jim again after that. And I'm talking about like Roger Goodell was there that night. Everybody came to New York that night to be a part of it, but it was a powerhouse music night. And then Jim took the stage with this half of John Mellencamp's band. And I was watching most of the show with the other half of the band that lived in New York, and it was a night that I would think everyone could experience if they love music.
Sure. I mean, when Natalie Merchant, when she stepped aside, but when Mike Mills, when he did Don't Go Back to Rockville, I was sitting next to Pete Ward, and Pete said, I love this song. It's one of my wife's favorite songs. And I said, I love it too. I didn't realize that I just didn't realize he'd written it, I guess. I mean, but I didn't. She's a big REM fan. I'm not so much, but I like a lot of what they did. I do like that song a lot. But I remember standing there with Pete, looking around and just saying, like you did, This is unbelievable. This is one of the greatest nights of my life. I'm looking, how am I? I'm standing next to Ringo's drum kit. I'm looking at a note that Paul McCartney wrote to John Lennon. Just an unbelievable. There was so much there to see, and it wasn't just Beatles paraphernalia. It was a wall, as you know, of guitars. And I remember talking to a guy there and said, "You spelled Pete Townsend's name wrong up there." And he said, "I know, not many people recognize that." I said, "Why do? Because I followed the Who." He said, "We started talking about the guitars, and he was telling me of all these guitars that were up there." But you know, I didn't. I,
Manuscripts too, the Kerouac stuff,
manuscript.
all of
All
that,
this
right?
manuscript. And he brought that to New York years earlier, and I saw him there at the library because it was put out the library, and I saw him there when it came. We talked for a long time, but I didn't talk to him personally, except for one time. That was 2 years ago after that situation. But we corresponded a lot by text. I will say that. We corresponded by text a lot. He'd ask me, "What do you think about this?" Whatever. And so I like that. I mean, I like the fact that I still had a connection with him. And I knew darn well, I told someone recently that was trying, someone who's interested in trying to get into the business. I said, "Listen, I don't know what there is out there. It's a whole different landscape now than when I got into it." But I told him, and I mean this, I said, "If there's one guy who will give you a chance, at least listen to you, at least let you get in the door, it's Jim Irsay in Indianapolis. He'll at least listen to you. You know, he'll give an opportunity." So, as I said, when that happened this week, I just looked at my phone and went, "You got to be kidding me. It's too soon. This isn't supposed to happen now. This is supposed to happen to guys like Jim Irsay." And of course, we know it happens all too often to people like Jim Irsay. And I'm really sad about it. But it does make me realize how he brought us together, along with a lot of other people, for some wonderful moments. Super Bowls, rock collections, everything.
Well, in my time with him, he tried to fix the Baltimore thing, and it was always like, and he couldn't, and he made it. I'll never forget him saying, "I'll do it. I can do anything but rewrite history. The way it happened is the way it happened." And there are a lot of people. We're in a world now where we're always trying to burn John Steadman's books for the history, right, or whatever. It's like, no. Like the way it really happened, I have immense respect for people who don't want to rewrite history, but maybe want to make history right. Right. You know what I mean? Like, and he was one of those kind of people to me that took where he was, which was an uncomfortable place and an uncomfortable last name, and did it proud. And I just want to make
He
sure,
did.
and we spend an hour on that here in Baltimore, at least talking about that, because he spent some formative years and probably some very uncomfortable years here in Baltimore as well. Clark Judge is my friend, my guest. We share a love of old Baltimore Colts stuff. We do share a love of the NFL and some expertise. He is a Pro Football Hall of Fame voter. Any complaints, lodge them at Clark the other 364 days of the year. And we'll get back to like real football here. But I mean, our city on the back end of the Justin Tucker thing, and we had this such, Lamar Jackson, and Harbaugh's got the new deal, and like all of this stuff happening. Derrick Henry. We'll get to football season, but the life of Jim Irsay. I'm glad we at least set the record straight for the Jim Irsay we knew.
Yeah, I'm glad you called about it, Nestor, because I have a lot of strong feelings about him, and a lot of people have feelings that are not so strong and not so positive. And I'm glad you were able to allow me to at least express another side of Jim Irsay, which I cherished and will forever be grateful for.
If you find that audio, I definitely want to I want to sit and listen to him tell stories about his dad, because especially in a professional setting toward the end of his life, my regret is that I never saw him again after the night in New York to just say thank you to him for it, but not just to say thank you. I would have been like, look at my pictures. I want to show you my pictures, right? I want to show you the video of you singing Tom Petty Something Big, which I'd love that song anyway. I couldn't believe, like, what a choice to do that song, sitting there smoking a cigarette up on stage with his cowboy hat, and all that good Kenny Wayne Shepherd doing the leads on it. It was insane, like playing the Mike Campbell part. But like, I would have said all of that to him over a buffet one night at an owner's meeting, had I had that opportunity. But I would just would have said, man, that was just an amazing thing you invited me to. And I never got to say thank you to him. So I'll be looking
Well,
for something big,
I did get a chance to say thank you to him for what he did for us in this town to help save a piece of land, and a big piece of land that will be preserved forever. I wrote him a letter,
What's the name of
And
that piece of land? I want to Google it now.
it's Deer Lake. Deer
Deer Lake.
Lake. Yeah, it's at Deer Lake and
Connecticut, correct?
in Connecticut, in Killingworth, Connecticut. And I wrote him a letter, and he was very gracious in his response. He didn't have to do anything. He didn't know anything about it. You know, I knew that. But I also knew it's Jim Irsay. Jim Irsay cares about the underdog. I said, we don't have a chance to get this, but I think we do. I think we could, if we get people like you involved. He goes, tell me what? And I just said, anything you can do, anything. So when he goes, is this okay? I went, are you kidding me? A six-figure deal? Yeah, absolutely.
I want to look up the quote that he had about Snyder on the way out the
I
door.
saw it.
Yeah, I want to get it right because he said something about like, I don't give a damn, let him come get me or something. And I thought, you know, if I think that might have been the last time he was quoted before he had his fall and he had his incident was just the defiance. It was a big middle finger to somebody doing something wrong in the NFL to
Yeah, that's
besmirch
right.
the shield because he didn't dig that.
Yeah, no, that's right. He was so different from everyone else. That's why I loved approaching him at owners' meetings. And I remember I went to the last owners' meeting I went to, and it was at the Biltmore. And I was standing talking to him in the lobby. And then, as you know, you get one guy to talk, all of a sudden there are 300 people around you. So Jim and our conversation was shared by others. A young guy from the company I was with afterwards said, "Hey, you did a really good job asking those questions." I said, "Gee, thanks. I've known this guy for 30 years, for God's sakes. But as long as it meets your approval, thanks very much." But I love dealing with him. We could cut through some of the bull, shit, you know, when we did, and we get to the crux of the problem, and it was always good to talk to him, and he, as I said, the thing that came through was a real care and a caring and a compassion for how do we get this right? What can we do to help? And as I said, the great example to me was that Deer Lake situation. You didn't have to do anything, you know. If you think if I'm going to approach some other owner and say, "Hey, listen, here's what we got. Okay, I give you $100, whatever, whatever." No, I mean, he said, "This is what I can do, and this is what I want to do. Is it okay? Is it okay?" I mean, that's who Jim Irsay was. Anyway, we've already
Well, I'll
gone
tell
over
you
that.
what, whenever the Colts people and the Irsay folks take that collection out to wherever I hope it goes again, and if it ever comes somewhere to be seen or placed somewhere permanently, you know, aside the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, whatever Jim wanted to be done with it. I don't even know what his will would be to
I don't
do,
either.
but whatever it is, it would be to be shared in some way. I have it not to be hidden. And wherever it winds up, if you get a chance to go see the Jim Irsay stuff, it is an amazing thing. Clark, we've had enough. We got a real football season. We'll get to that. I'll throw, you know, rocks at you about Hall of Fame voting and all that at some point. We'll even
You don't
maybe
want to
even
talk about the Orioles? Oh,
not today. I'd rather talk about Todd Rundgren. Clark
there you
Judge can
go.
be found out on the interwebs. He is still doing it, the history of the NFL, better than anybody else. History of pro football and people like Jim Irsay and anyone like that. We'll do a whole hour on Jim Henneman at some other point as well for Baltimore sports writing legends. I am Nestor. We are WNSD, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. And we never stop talking Baltimore positive with my long hair out.